All right, no football around here. The first of two byes, but some intriguing games in the Big Ten and across the country. The Pac-12 is on display this weekend, as we do every Friday, a key component to breaking down everything from coast to coast. Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews joins us. Brett, good Friday morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Gary. Thanks for having me back on.
Hey, before we dive into the slate tomorrow, let's talk about Stanford. And we've talked about David Shaw and this Stanford team that has had injuries and they haven't gotten off to a good start. They go from eking out a win against Northwestern to get blown out at UCF. They're a hard team to make sense of. After watching UCLA go to the farm last night and do what they did, where is David Shaw and Stanford at right now?
Yeah, Stanford's one of the most unpredictable teams, really week to week. You know, the last 10 years, Harbaugh started it, Shaw continued it. They were a running first, a power offensive line kind of program, a ball control program, and that worked for, you know, the better half of a decade. Last year, you started to see that go away. They weren't as able to establish the run game like they used to in years past. They went actually more towards a pass-heavy attack. It won some games, but we weren't sure coming into 2019 what to expect, and it's just neither this year. They can't throw the ball. They can't run the ball. It was kind of fitting. There was a 4th-and-1, and Shaw elected to go for it last night, and they couldn't get a yard in run push against a really bad UCLA defense. That kind of summed it up, that they don't have the line anymore. They don't have the power running backs, and they're on their third-string quarterback. So, yeah, it's really hard to predict them, but it's not the Stanford we're used to.
Do you have any sense? We love David Shaw. We love him even more when he sits down on television for the NFL draft, the way he breaks down college prospects. He looks good on TV. He's comfortable. NFL people have had some interest in him. Do you think the door after a season like this or the last couple of years opens up that David Shaw would listen closely to the NFL?
I think he'd consider it for sure. You know, I think that the brand of football that they established at Stanford, it might be going away a bit in college football. You see teams like Alabama and LSU that had similar blueprints on offense. They've modernized. You see what they've done with Tua. You see what LSU is doing this year. You know, and teams that are staying with the old formula, like a Georgia or a Michigan, they're kind of being left behind. They're losing games they shouldn't lose. So I wonder if maybe the old formula of, you know, big offensive line, big power run game might be losing its grip on that, especially from California, where they don't really have a big lineman pool. You got to go southeast for that or Midwest for that. So it's more skill guys out in California. So I don't know if it really fits anymore. So, yeah, I think you'd be open to that.
So let's stick with that because of the evolution. We kind of know what the formula is to win in the Big Ten, what the formula has changed a little bit, where the quarterback position is getting better and better in that conference. Are we seeing an evolution change in the SEC where from they're still the dominant defensive line, but not as known for defense as they've been in the past, that the SEC is making the cyclical turn back to a conference that has some really, really good quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think that that's a good way of putting it. It was kind of on full display last Saturday. Two good examples, like I said, was the Georgia-South Carolina game. You see an offense that's stuck in the old SEC way, where they do have athletes, but it's more of a, you know, it's more traditional. It's not dynamic by any means. And they you open yourself up to losing games you probably shouldn't against South Carolina. But then in the night game, you see Florida and LSU. LSU especially opening it up for receivers. They've a great stable of talent at receiver, but finally putting it to use. They've recruited well the last 15 years. And actually since 2000, I looked this up, LSU, their average passing attack is in the 60 to 70 range. This year, they're number 2 in the country. So it's a monumental shift. They're taking advantage of their talent advantage. And yeah, I think that it's working. You see Alabama did it, LSU did it. And teams that are staying behind are falling behind. So I think you're right on with that. It's going to be a shift.
Hey, let's stay in the SEC with this weekend. South Carolina wins between the hedges in a game that is tough to explain other than there was bad kicking and bad late-game management on both sides. Now they play Florida coming off, and Florida's been on a run of playing Auburn and LSU, and now they get South Carolina in Columbia. A couple of weeks ago, this looked like a mismatch. Now how does this game look like to you tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I give credit to South Carolina for getting it done. I mean, Georgia handed them some possessions late in the game from fumble to, you know, going in for another score, fumble to snap even. So, but I don't know, long story short, I think I was really impressed with what Florida did against LSU. I know they lost, but for Kyle Trask coming in one of his first few starts ever, I mean, he looked the part. He threw the ball pretty well, 300 yards against an LSU secondary that's always pretty tough, has All-American caliber players. So I was more so, I was even impressed with Florida despite the loss. I think the Vegas line at -5 in Florida's favor is a bit of an overreaction. I think it should be higher in Florida's favor. I think people are, you know, a little bit of public perception about the South Carolina game last week and overemphasizing. But I think Florida by more than a touchdown.
LSU, any concerns in Stark Vegas this weekend?
I don't think so. I mean, this is not the Mississippi State from a few years back. And when I look back, I'm actually excited to see at the end of the season how Joe Moore had graded out my game grader when you compare the last 5 years under Dan Mullen, Mississippi State, to his first two in Starkville. I think there's been a decline or not the offensive explosion we thought we'd see from bringing Moorhead in. Last week they go and lose to Tennessee, who was statistically one of the worst teams in FBS coming into last Saturday. Mississippi State also with a loss to Kansas State, who looks like maybe bottom tier in the Big 12 this year. So it's not the old Mississippi State. I think LSU rolls.
Third Saturday in October is special for people in Alabama and Tennessee because the Vols and the Tide get together. I've heard sarcastically some people that cover Tennessee saying Tennessee should rest some starters in this game. Can you imagine a rivalry game that has this big of a gap between where two programs are right now than Tennessee and Alabama?
Yeah, it's just fascinating seeing these lines every week, but especially, like you said, in a rivalry, you open it up, it's 35 points, 5-touchdown favorite for Alabama. It's just incredible. But when you look into it, it's not even that far-fetched. I mean, the talent levels are completely different, coaching levels. The whole culture has obviously been built at Alabama for a decade. Jeremy Pruitt's only in a year and a half in. And there's that stat about Saban's disciples playing against him, and Jeremy Pruitt is that. He was a coach under Saban for a couple years there. It's just night and day in terms of roster talent and where they are in the program. So, yeah, it's going to be another blowout. I don't see a close one like we had some years under Derek Dooley and Lane Kiffin, but I think another blowout. It's hard to believe.
Hey, if you're in the ACC and you're Clemson, is everything now about style points moving forward in that conference?
Yeah, I think, and this is, you hear a lot of good coaches say this, that they're competing against themselves every week. Yeah. It doesn't matter if the backups are in, the third stringers, every snap is a competition. So with that mindset, I think they're going to continue to roll teams. They're going to continue to get a lot of depth players playing time. That's something Clemson does better than any team in America. They play their backups, their third stringers, their true freshmen. More than anyone. And what that ends up happening is you are building your two deep, your three deep, so that in November, December, in the playoffs, they're fully loaded. They can go two platoons deep. And that depth really shines through. So I think they're building. They get better every year as the season goes on, and that's going to continue to happen.
Hey, there's some intriguing group of five games this weekend, and UCF is down this year. What do you think is the best group of five team out there?
Yeah, so I ran my numbers. Right now, actually, UCF still checks out at number one. I think that's a byproduct of their blowout of Stanford, just outgaining them by 350 yards, just a statistical anomaly. Throwing UCF out because they have two losses, I'd probably say Boise. They're undefeated. SMU's up there as well. I always lean Mountain West over the AAC in terms of quality of teams and talent. So I'd probably go with Boise State right now, but we're going to learn a lot about SMU going against Temple, who's been a giant killer recently, so it's a good test for them.
Let's go to the Pac-12. What do we learn this weekend about Mario Cristobal and their matchup in Seattle against Washington?
Yeah, this is huge. This is a huge measuring stick game for him because, you know, this time last year, he was going into these type of games and blowing it. I mean, I almost made a weekly award on Twitter about the Cristobal Award, the coach that gives away a surefire win mid-game, but he's proven to be better in his second year. That's a growing pains kind of thing for a young head coach. But this is huge. Going up against the Peterson staff, Jimmy Lake, Kwiatkowski, the OD coordinator at Washington, they have the proven formula. They have the track record. But this is a year that Oregon should be able to sneak up and get Washington because this is a Washington team that looked terrible against Cal and looked terrible against Stanford, who are proving to be bottom-tier teams now that the season's starting to unfold even more. If Oregon can't get it done this year, I think there's serious issues. So it's almost almost a must win in my opinion, because this is a year to win the North. They have to convert this game.
And this is the weekend for the Pac-12, whether it be that game or seeing where Utah is at. If you were making a list of surprises in college football halfway through the year, I would imagine that Arizona State is near the top of that list.
Yeah, they are, but in a way they're not, because actually I put them second in the Pac-12 South coming into the year. That's higher than any other publication. So I was pretty bullish on Arizona State coming in. Probably the bigger shock to me in the Pac-12 would be Washington. I had them winning the North, and their young talent on defense hasn't evolved as quickly as I'd have hoped, and they've come out flat a few games, like I said. But now with Herm Edwards, I think that they have a puncher's chance in most games. It's funny, all the games he coaches, they're within 3 or 7 points. Yep. It's almost like an NFL feel. But with Utah, I think they're really hitting their stride. I really wish they had that USC game back because I think they're the better team, and I think they're starting to roll. So, but one side note of the Pac-12 I'm pretty upset about is this is a major game. This is two top 20 teams, Utah and Arizona State, and no one's going to see it. It's a 6 o'clock kick on the Pac-12 network. And, I mean, I know it's in some homes, but the majority of people can't even see this game. And terrible for their conference. You know, you want to highlight your ranked teams and your marquee matchups, and no one's going to even see this.
Well, and then you're in the Big Ten where your marquee team is playing on a Friday night. So,
yeah, that's another issue. And it's on, I think, Fox Business or something, but because the Yankees got in the way. But no, I'm not a big fan of the Friday night games either. I think that's, you know, that should be the high school football night. It also blows up a recruiting opportunity. You know, kids are playing that Friday night. Mm-hmm. They can't come and visit your school. I want to bring back the Thursday night games. I think that was a special place for college football. I know the ACC used to do that big time, the old Big East.
Yep.
That's gone away. That's a shame. I think that they could really compete with the NFL as their product is becoming a bit more watered down.
Yeah, we are in full agreement here. I think there are some times where the college football, they shy away from the NFL, but if you give them a good game, people will tune in. Like, I imagine the ratings were fairly good last night for UCLA and Stanford on ESPN.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're the Pac-12, why don't you throw on that marquee game? Yeah. Put that Utah-Arizona State game Thursday night and go toe-to-toe with the NFL. I think you'd get a lot of interested college people and interested football fans because they don't want to sit there and watch a flag fest like the NFL is. So, I wish they would compete more. I wish they wouldn't be as scared of the NFL as they are, but I guess that's just big TV, you know.
Hey, should Michigan fans be scared of returning of the favor at Penn State tomorrow night? Last year was 42-7. Michigan thrashed Penn State. Penn State's got that defense. They've got James Franklin. They've got the wideout. If you're Michigan, how are you feeling walking into that tomorrow night?
Yeah, the wideout's a terrifying experience. You know, a friend of mine played and walked on at Penn State, and he got to live out 4 wideouts and was describing it to me. It's incredible. I've been to normal day games and a night game there, but not a wideout. You can still sense it's going to be an incredible environment. I think with Penn State, their talent level is right up there with Ohio State and Michigan. You know, they've recruited better than Michigan actually the last few years, but more so that they're able to replace their stars. And this is kind of hard to do, but they replaced Saquon Barkley right in with Miles Sanders. Now Sanders is gone. They have Journey Brown and Noah Kane. They've done the same at receiver and now at quarterback. I thought without Trace McSorley, they would take a little bit of a step back or at least show some growing pains, but Sean Clifford's firing on all cylinders. And this is looking like a very complete team, a fast team. And I think that they'll get it done against Michigan. Who, if you want to make the comparison, Michigan might be the Georgia of the Big Ten, who's kind of still with that old traditional offense, not letting their athletes shine through. There was talks of doing it. Josh Gattis had all the intentions in the world to do it, but it's not happening. So until then, I think that they're going to be suffocated by the Penn State defense.
Man, whether it be offense or defense, I look to Oklahoma, Alex Grinch, who comes with a pretty good resume, young in his career. Instead of going with a bunch of complex stuff that I think held Mike Stoops and that defense back, he just lets guys play, and we see a result of the Kenneth Murrays and the other talented players on that Sooner defense, what they look like against a team like Texas last week. I'm right there with you about just letting guys play.
Yeah, that's a good example, too. And another one was Ohio State, where this year with Ryan Day, their defense, they threw out their, you know, they called it Harry Potter size, their playbook, how thick it used to be under the old regime. They threw that out the window. They're like, you know what, we have the best players. We have the fastest players. Let them go play. Minimal thinking, minimal assignments, just free-flowing and play. And then it lets your talent take over. Oklahoma, they look fast on defense, too, and they're tackling well, something you hadn't seen for years from them. Uh-huh. And that Texas score was really an anomaly. It really should have been like 56-20 had they converted the red zone opportunity. So more of a beatdown than the scoreboard would show, even.
Yeah, for us, though, that had a little financial interest on it, we were okay with it being a 34-27 game.
Yeah.
Brett, we appreciate it. Next week, we'll get your thoughts midway through the season for Nebraska and a slate next week that'll include Wisconsin and Ohio State.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. All right, Gary, thanks.
That's Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews. We enjoy chatting with him every Friday as we go coast to coast. Week 8 of the season. Who's on upset alert? Could it be Utah? Could it be Oregon? Herm Edwards, 12-7 in his first 19 games in the desert. Probably, if I'm doing watchability rankings, George, Oregon, Washington on ABC this weekend is probably number one. When was the last time you had a Pac-12 game that slid into your number one spot? I mean, Michigan, Penn State is probably, it's in my top five, but it's probably not in my one, two, or even three. I got a lot of interest. I'm very intrigued by Baylor, Oklahoma State this weekend. No update on Mahomes, but I did notice that Ed Werder, who is back with ESPN, is live outside of Arrowhead.
Wow.
Big deal. We'll touch on some of the things that Jay Foreman mentioned, and along with what Brett mentioned about this weekend of college football. I got a question. Something Penn State is doing, they did it as a spark about 15 years ago. How come it can't work around here? I'll ask that question to all of you when you return. It's a Football Friday Fiesta, 1108 on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone and 1620thezone.com.